Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Monday, October 28th.
When the Santa Fe County Commissioners meet tomorrow, they're scheduled to nominate a replacement for the late State Representative Stephen Easley. The El Dorado Democrat died earlier this year. Each of the four counties that make up the House seat from District 50 is charged with forwarding the name of a nominee to Governor Susana Martinez, who will choose among them. The selected replacement will serve out the remainder of Representative Easley's term. Public Service Company of New Mexico on Tuesday will present a $5,000 check to the American Red Cross in Las Vegas. The utility announced its financial support of the emergency agency's disaster relief efforts in Las Vegas after September's flooding. Seven PNM employees helped the local chapter of the Red Cross to assess property damage caused by the weather disaster. The employees, who usually spend their time working on power lines, were trained in damage assessment and are now able to step up to assist the community in the event of another disaster. A hazmat incident in downtown Santa Fe over the weekend was instigated when hydrogen peroxide began bubbling up through the street on Montezuma Avenue. It forced authorities to close down some streets and businesses in the vicinity of the district courthouse. Contractors have been using the hydrogen peroxide to clean up decades-old petroleum contamination found in soils throughout the area. Santa Fe's two Walmart stores are popular with thieves. The New Mexican reports over the past 2 years the stores on Cerrillos Road and on Herrera Drive have reported more than 650 burglaries and shoplifting crimes. Both Santa Fe Police Chief Ray Riel and Santa Fe County Sheriff Robert Garcia blame drug addiction for the criminal activity. Both law enforcement agencies report a rise in commercial burglaries in the past year. Wealthy Santa Fe businessman Alan Weber is poised to run for the Democratic nomination for governor. Weber, co-founder of the business magazine Fast Company, also had served as a speechwriter for former Massachusetts governor and presidential candidate Michael Dukakis. Political blogger Joe Monahan says Weber has hired a campaign consultant and has potential to be a self-funder in the primary and outspend the current other candidates. Governor Martinez is out of state as she embarks on a political fundraising quest. She'll be making stops in Georgia, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Arkansas before returning to New Mexico tomorrow. Expenses are being covered by the governor's reelection campaign. Five prescribed burns on Santa Fe National Forest lands get underway both today and tomorrow. In all, nearly 1,000 acres of woodland slash will be burned under controlled conditions to prevent the risk of future wildfire. The largest burn is in the Jemez, where 500 acres will begin treatment today. Tomorrow, weather permitting, adds 120 acres in the Santa Fe watershed. Smoke is expected to be widely visible throughout the region. New Mexico State University has received a more than $1 million gift to establish an endowed chair in entrepreneurship, as well as a scholarship for business students. NMSU says it comes from alumnus Bill Sheriff and his wife. University officials hope the gift will attract and reward faculty who provide leadership and expertise in cultivating a spirit of entrepreneurship in New Mexico. A company that provides DC-10 air tankers and crews to fight western wildfires is setting up shop in Albuquerque. 10-tanker air carrier has relocated from Southern California to a large facility previously owned by Eclipse Aviation. The company modifies DC-10 aircraft to carry large fire-retardant tanks, with two such remodels currently in service. The Albuquerque Journal reports one of those is already in residence at the Albuquerque Sunport, and a second is set to arrive in spring. Weather for Santa Fe, sunny today with highs in the low 60s, overnight lows tonight near 40, windy tomorrow and cooler with highs in the upper 50s. A very slight chance for showers tomorrow night ushers in much cooler temperatures on Wednesday, highs then only in the upper 40s. I'm Tom Trowbridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at the big board on Wall Street at midday, the Dow currently up 21 at 15,591. The NASDAQ off less than 1 point. It stands at 3,942. And the S&P 500 is up 3 points. It stands at 1,763. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. For the past few years, Santa Fe law enforcement has been working hard to decrease the city's high residential burglary rate. Some of the tactics that have been employed include increasing neighborhood police patrols and a public awareness campaign, as well as a crackdown on drug trafficking, believed to fuel many of the burglaries. For the past several months, there has been a significant decrease in the number of residential property crimes. But recently, there have been a number of anecdotal reports suggesting it has once again started to rise. Here to talk with us is Selena Westervelt of the Santa Fe Police Department. Selena, has, in fact, the residential burglary rate here in Santa Fe increased?
Yes, a slight tick from the last 2 months or so. We are on pace still to hit a record low for property crimes in the city of Santa Fe, a 10-year low, in fact. But as the months kind of get colder and we've been following a couple of our known suspects out and about, they've been released recently and we are seeing a slight uptick in property crimes. I would say I think we've seen about a 20% increase from September compared to the month before. But if you compare that to numbers from 2010, we're still way under.
And what do you think has led to this increased rate?
It's a bunch of factors combined. So the cold weather does affect it because we see that oftentimes these people want to just make some quick money to be able to use for holiday spending, to be able to use themselves a little bit warmer, whatever it might be. But then, too, we've made some pretty substantial drug arrests recently. So it's my assumption that the price of drugs on the street has probably gone up a little bit, which drives users to commit more crimes to be able to pay for their habits. So that is probably a factor as well. And I think in Santa Fe, we've been reporting, you know, the numbers are going down, the numbers are going down. Residents might not be as cautious as they have been in the past, because there is a sense of increased security. So you have to remind yourself constantly that just because the numbers are going down, we still have to be on our guard.
Now, you mentioned that it's colder. One thing that folks sometimes do on cold mornings is to start their cars, then leave it to warm up for 5 or 10 minutes. Is this a good idea or risky behavior?
Always a dangerous thing to do. Oftentimes, you know, there's people in the area who just want to take advantage of an easy situation, and warming up a car, letting it sit idle with the keys in it is definitely a dangerous situation. Get that spare key, lock the door, that helps deter things, and just try not to leave it running idle by itself for too long. You take your morning coffee, sit inside while it warms up, just anything you can do to protect yourself.
And what can residents do to help lower the rate?
My advice to people is please, please, please lock your windows and doors. It sounds silly, but that's the main thing we see people targeting. Some of these property crime offenders are known to go door-to-door just checking the door handles to see, not only in homes, but in vehicles as well, just to see where there is an easy target. We're also asking people to take any items that they might have that are in plain view out of their cars especially. We had one offender that was just arrested about 2 weeks ago who was going through vehicles and stealing just the pocket change out of the cup holders. And many of us do that. We leave our change just sitting there in the center console. Well, he was able to look inside the car, see that there, break a window, grab the change, and flee the area. He's probably getting away with $2, but for the car owner, that's an expensive window that they'll have to replace, and then the feeling of being violated. And it's just not something we want to see in the city. Another thing that we're asking people to do, and it could take 5 seconds, is get home from work, make a circle around your property, and think like a burglar. Think, if I was going to get into my house right now, how would I do it? And what can I see from the outside? Because that's really what they do as well, and it'll make all the difference if you kind of do some of those things to protect your house, close the blinds, move the TV away from the main window, and just try and secure your residence.
Anything else you'd like to add?
just that we always need as much help as possible from the community. We can't be everywhere at once, so anytime you can have those community watches set up in your neighborhood, we do have information on our website to be able to set up a neighborhood watch and just watch out for each other and make sure everything is locked and secured.
Selena Westervelt with the Santa Fe Police Department, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Programming is underwritten in part by the New Mexico Land Conservancy, a nonprofit celebrating 11 years working with New Mexico landowners to preserve our land heritage by conserving the places they love. This year's Jane Wayne Pachesky Conservation Award will be given to fourth-generation rancher Jim Winder at an upscale Western gala featuring Sid Masters and the Swing Riders and locally sourced food at the Farmers Market Pavilion on November 8th. To learn more, visit nmlandconservancy.org.
17 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. In recent days, we've heard of several initiatives being launched to aid and assist our nation's military veterans. Last week, New Mexico Representative Michelle Luan Grisham introduced a bipartisan piece of legislation that would help disabled veterans live independently. It would do so by removing the cap on the number of veterans able to participate in the federal Independent Living Program. That currently accommodates just 2,700 such military members, with thousands more waiting for an opportunity to enter the program. Also last week, Governor Susana Martinez announced special statewide employment programs geared to hiring veterans both within the trucking industry and emergency medical service fields. And here in Santa Fe, heading into the weekend, Santa Fe University of Art and Design held an event to draw attention to the plight of military veterans that, for a variety of reasons, have fallen into homelessness after serving in our nation's wars. KSFR reporter Joe Day attended that gathering, and he files this report.
America, America, God shed
you. I'm Joe Day, and I'm at an event designed to provide help of various kinds for homeless military veterans. Philip Chavez, a combat veteran himself, was the principal organizer of this event called a stand down. Why the words stand down? What does that mean?
Stand down is a terminology used for veterans who were in a combat area, soldiers, and what they would do is fresh soldiers would relieve them and they'd go to a rear area for a stand down where they'd get showers, haircuts, clean clothes, you know, there'd be a chaplain and medical care and stuff like that. Once they had their R&R for about a week, then they'd move them back up to the front lines.
What is the main purpose of this event?
Well, the main purpose is Adventist Community Service came together, all the different churches for the Seventh-day Adventist churches, and they wanted to reach out to the homeless and veterans. So what we did is we modeled this after different stand-downs, and we've just expanded it. I think this is the first one in the nation to actually have free dental care, plus the spiritual side, so that's completely different, which is really, really nice.
What are some of the services that are being offered here?
Haircuts. We have dental care. We have medical care. We have flu shots. We have legal aid. We have municipal courts here to take care of their traffic tickets. And then the spiritual side, we have foot washing. We have the prayer room. We have anointing. We have just different things for the veterans. You know, when I retired from the military, I lost something, and I wanted to get that back. And I found the way to get that back and have that togetherness, that band of brothers again, is to help other veterans.
You're a veteran, sir. What brought you here?
I'm temporarily homeless. And this is a good program. Got a lot of information, a lot of services.
Do you think you'll be able to find a place to live, a shelter here?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've already gotten some good information.
You were telling me that you're a veteran and you're headed up north, do some work up there.
Yes, sir. Oil field. It's pretty much booming up there. A lot of work up there.
So, what'd you find here that's going to be useful for you?
A lot of cold weather undergarments. That's basically it. Sleeping bag, blankets. You know, that stuff helped me out pretty good up there.
You're a veteran as well. What brought you here?
Looking for help with housing. And, of course, a few other items that I may be able to acquire. I could just got me a sleeping bag and a sweater.
Do you think you'll be able to find a place to live?
The possibilities are good.
Some of the people who came here were not military veterans, but no one was turned away. I also talked to Tim Hale, New Mexico's Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Give me an idea of the extent of the homeless veterans problem here in New Mexico.
Well, Joe, that's kind of a hard target to hit on any given day. As most people who work in the homeless communities know, you know, as we move through the winter months, our population will grow. What we see typically as a population count is somewhere around 2,000 in the entire state of New Mexico. The largest majority of those are between, usually in the Santa Fe-Albuquerque corridor. As the winter moves on, they'll move down towards Las Cruces, possibly even over towards Silver City, you know, moving towards Tucson. But it's a significant problem, and as Secretary Shinseki says, you know, at the national level, you know, it is a national travesty. And it happens for a number of reasons, but our goal here today and all these events is to again try and give resources to those homeless vets so that they can start moving up. It's a hand up, not a handout.
How do you reach someone that is truly homeless? I mean, that is actually living on the street. It must be very difficult.
It is, and that's why these events are so important. That's why it's so important that we move them out to different locations in the state to offer that opportunity. You know, most of the people who will come through today, they didn't see it on an email text. They didn't see it on Facebook. They found out about it by word of mouth through that homeless community. The best way to become involved is to find one of those groups that are in your locale. You know, we've got a lot of faith-based groups that are stepping up and saying, we're getting into the homeless. We're going to help solve the homeless issues. And theirs are not to bring in and proselytize. They're just trying to help down in the streets. That great support that we've had for the military and the veterans over the past 12 years since 9/11 will start to wane. How many Americans really realize that 4 weeks ago we lost almost a full Special Forces Green Beret team up in Afghanistan? Some places, I don't even think it made page 8 of the paper. Afghanistan is drawing down. Iraq is pretty much pulled out. The military is being forced to reduce their numbers. 10 years from now, it will be a travesty if we're talking about the same issues with this generation of veterans as we talked about with the Vietnam generation 40 years ago, where people forgot about them.
For KSFR News, this is Joe Day reporting.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Academy for the Love of Learning, presenting Life is What You Make It, a thought-provoking and inspiring concert and conversation with Peter Buffett, November 7th at the Linzik Performing Arts Center. The Academy for the Love of Learning's mission is to awaken, enliven, nurture, and sustain the natural love of learning in people of all ages. More information at aloveoflearning.org.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Not all that long ago, debate existed over whether global warming was real. Science has since proven that human-caused climate change is an undeniable phenomenon. An event in Santa Fe today discussed the causal factors and what, if anything, can still be done. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard has the story.
Climate change at one time generated controversy and heated arguments over whether it actually existed. Now, the bulk of the scientific data makes it clear that indeed climate warming is a reality. This morning in Santa Fe, there was a special presentation on the change in our Earth's climate. The main speaker was Kimberly Samuels Crow, who's a fourth-year PhD student at the University of New Mexico in Earth and Planetary Sciences.
First, I think it's important to distinguish between weather and climate, because I think a lot of times on a cold, snowy day, people think, how could climate possibly be changing? How could it be getting warmer? It seems so cold out. But weather is kind of a snapshot of atmospheric conditions at a given time. And those atmospheric conditions include things like temperature and humidity. But climate is the long-term average of those conditions. And usually you use a 30-year average when you're studying climate. But when we talk about climate change now, what we're typically talking about is that it refers to the changes in global air temperatures, humidity, and other climate parameters since the start of the Industrial Revolution. And over the past century, the temperatures have risen about 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit, and the projected rise in temperature is much greater than that. The projected rise over the next century is 2 degrees to 11.5 degrees Fahrenheit.
The scientist says that there are much larger concerns about the effect of the rising temperature beyond shortened ski seasons and fewer white Christmases.
It's not going to affect every part of the world in the exact same way. And the biggest difference and the biggest thing that affects New Mexico is, of course, our water resources, because wet places are projected to get wetter and dry places are projected to get drier. And we've actually seen the impacts of long-term drought here in New Mexico. So, you know, that's where we're seeing the impact of climate change, that we're seeing the impact of climate change in our water resources. The snowpack in Colorado is decreasing, and that's affecting the water levels in our rivers and reservoirs. And even with the recent rains, our reservoirs aren't at full capacity. So Elephant Butte, I guess in July, before the recent rains started, was only at 3% of its capacity. And then with all the rains we've had, they've had a great influx of water into the reservoir, but that's brought it up to 8% of capacity, according to the Elephant Butte Irrigation District.
So-called greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide are the major culprits. While these gases can be released from natural processes, evidence shows that the increases are coming from human enterprise and actions, meaning we can take an active role in reversing the trend.
There are a couple of places that CO2 could come from naturally. You could get it from the degassing of volcanoes, or you could get it from the degassing of CO2 from the oceans. If CO2 were degassing from oceans and that was leading to the increase in CO2 in the atmosphere, you would see the increase first in the southern hemisphere because the southern hemisphere is more oceanic than the northern hemisphere. But we see it first in the northern hemisphere where there are more people. The concentrations of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere have been rising since the start of the Industrial Revolution, and the temperatures have been rising too. And so there are a number of different lines of evidence that go into the conclusion that these increased concentrations in greenhouse gases are in fact responsible for climate change. What we do now will determine how much warming we're likely to experience, because those different projections in warming are related to the amount of greenhouse gases that we're going to continue putting into the atmosphere. So in order to minimize the temperature increase, we can cut our own carbon emissions as individuals, and there are a number of ways of doing that, and there are a number of websites online where you can calculate your personal carbon footprint and sort of evaluate what would be best for your family in terms of cutting individual carbon emissions. But also as a society, we can have a larger impact by electing officials who are willing and able to understand the conclusions that 97% of climate scientists agree on, and they're willing and able to draft and enact policies that will help us reduce our emissions as a country.
Earth and planetary scientist Kimberly Samuels Crowe. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
It's the 32nd Annual Dixon Studio Tour, a fall tradition in New Mexico. Visit the open studios for a wide variety of artists featuring contemporary and traditional fine art and crafts. Saturday and Sunday, November 2nd and 3rd from 9 to 5. Preview group show of the artists on Friday evening, November 1st. For info and to download maps, visit dixonarts.org. A message from the nonprofit Embuto Arts Association.
30 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. A new city program is going to both help recycle old unwanted bicycles and provide a gift of a useful item to Santa Feans in need of a mode of transportation. Here to tell us about the program is Lisa Merrill with the Santa Fe Solid Waste Management Agency. Lisa, tell us about this new initiative regarding old bicycles.
So that actually came about because Chainbreaker Collective, which is a local nonprofit that helps provide bicycles, they actually train people to rebuild bicycles and repair bicycles so that they actually know how to take care of their bike, and they give them to people in the community that, you know, can't afford a car or need some type of transportation. And Chainbreaker Collective actually contacted us and asked us if, you know, we had any bikes that we were able to donate. And so we developed this pilot program for them because, surprisingly, we have brand new bikes sometimes that come on to the tipping floor, which, you know, is where the area that goes to the landfill eventually. And so what we started to do, because we were recycling them in scrap metal, and now we're, instead of recycling them as scrap metal, we're just pulling them off to the side and saving them for Chainbreaker, and then Chainbreaker will take them back to their shop and pick off the parts that are good, or if the whole bike is usable, then they'll just clean it up and help people repair their bikes and get on the road.
How can people who have old bicycles get them recycled?
Actually, it would be best if people did bring their bikes directly to Chainbreaker Collective. We're kind of just the middle ground for people that don't know about the bike reuse pilot program. But Chainbreaker is located at 1515 5th Street in Santa Fe, and they have their little workshop there. You can also visit their website at chainbreaker.org and look up their Bicycle Resource Center.
Does the agency have a website people can visit to get more information on recycling in Santa Fe?
You can visit this website, www.santafe.recycling.org. is kind of the hub for the city and county. All the information on solid waste and recycling is at santafe.recycling.org.
Lisa Merrill from the Santa Fe Solid Waste Management Agency, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. Now through November 1st, fishermen can pull as many rainbow trout as they please from a 2-mile stretch of the Santa Fe River. Joining us now to talk more about how this came about is Rachel Shockley with the Department of Game and Fish. Rachel, give us the details.
We had a really wonderful event. It was the Children's Fishing Derby, and we were able to stock 500 beautiful rainbow trout. And now that the Santa Fe River's flow is going to drop to a level that's not going to be able to support those trout, we want to make sure that they're all removed and given a good purpose. And so we want to be able to offer anglers unlimited catch.
Now, it's unlimited catch for anglers, but they're still required to have a license, are they not?
That is correct. We want people to have their legal fishing license for New Mexico in order to participate. But that's one of the few barriers. And after that, then they're able to harvest as many fish in that 2-mile stretch as they can.
Well, that annual Children's Fishing Derby is a big event. A lot of people partake of that. And as you mentioned, it was stocked with about 500 rainbow trout. Any idea as to how many may indeed be left in the river?
I doubt there's very many left. I want to say that I heard there was 150 children that participated. A lot of them had strings of more than one fish. And so it's possible that there are just a handful of rainbows left in the river.
It's being done because we want these fish pulled out before the river starts to run dry. Now, it goes on to November 1st. Is that when it's projected that additional water flow will be cut off?
It is. There's been a slight drop already, and some folks in Santa Fe may have noticed that. But then the water will continue to drop after November 1st to a pretty low level.
Can people net them out of the river?
That's correct. We are allowing netting and bait fishing, fly fishing. So whatever your preferred method is, it's probably allowed. You can check out our website to see the details on legal take, and that's going to be at wildlife.state.nm.us.
Rachel Shockley with the Department of Game and Fish, many thanks for joining us. 12:34 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Sid and Michelle of Monroe Gallery of Photography are friends of mine, not invite me to their house kind of friends. Nobody invites me to their house. Well, Bill Dupuy did once, but he thought he was calling Dan Garrity, so that doesn't count. What does count is another great thought and emotion-provoking photographic exhibition recounting and delineating our time. From the Withers Collection Museum and Gallery, located on the artery, Beale Street of Memphis, Tennessee, the Monroe Gallery offers us, as their press release says, a chronicle of the great American crusade of the second half of the 20th century. That was the Civil Rights Movement. The images of Ernest Withers on display at the Monroe Gallery will entrance you, fascinate you, inform you, remind you, disturb you, exhilarate you, and perhaps bring you pause and regret, and maybe sorrow. I have a dream. Indeed. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity here with thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge, Charles Maynard, and Joe Day. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.